All right, we're going to start here on the Mishnah on the bottom of Pei Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, "Bechol me'arvin u'mishtatfim." Can make an eruvet of anything. Chutz mi'amayim ve'amelach, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. You can do it except for water and salt. You can make the eruv and the shituf mevot out of anything you want. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, kikar hu eruv. That the only thing you could use for an eruv is bread. Afilu ma'afas sa'a v'hu brusa ein marvin ba. Even if you have this tremendous, large loaf of bread, but it's a broken piece of bread, you cannot use it. Kikar ki isar. If you have a small roll that is like an isar or the value of an isar, v'hu shalem, as long as it's whole, ma'arvin bo. So Rabbi Yeshua has two requirements here. First requirement is that you utilize bread for the eruv, and number two is when you do utilize bread for the eruv, you use a whole piece and not a portion or piece of bread. So Gemara asks the obvious question, which is Tanina Chad Zimno. We've already seen this back at the beginning of Masechta, the exact same Mishnah, which is Bechol Marvin Umishtatfim, Chutz Me'amayim Ve'Melach. So why are we repeating this Mishnah over here? So Amar Rabba La'afuke Mid Rabbi Yoshua. This comes to negate this position of Rabbi Yoshua. Ta'amar Kikarin Mid Achrin Alo. That he says that you can use bread, nothing else. Kamash Malan Bakol. We disagree with that, and we say you can use or utilize anything you want. So here you have a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot as how to read this Gemara, plus the subsequent Gemara. We'll read it as Rashi's interpretation first, and then we'll move forward. But Rashi says, had you solely had the Mishnayot laid out as such, that we have the Mishnah back in the beginning of Eruvin, which says, B'chol me'arvin u'shtatvim b'chutz min ha'mayim v'amelach, back there, I would have thought it was speaking about Eruvei Trumin. And even Rabbi Yoshua would have agreed to the fact that you don't need to use a kikar by Eruvei Trumin, which we'll see a reason why in a couple minutes in the Gemara. But for Eruvei Chatzerot, we'll have the statement of Rabbi Yoshua over here, who says, Bekikar hu Eruv. And you would have thought Eruvei Chatzerot were done with bread. So Rabbi Yoshua will agree by Eruvei Trumin that you don't need bread. He will say by Eruvei Chatzerot that we do need bread. And then there's no disagreement. Everybody agrees to that. That will be the position of everyone. We'll agree to Rabbi Yoshua's position here. And Rabbi Yeshua would have agreed to the position of the Mishnah back in Tchumin. So along comes the Gemara and says, Bakol. Over here, Bakol me'arvim mishtatfim. We have here a statement against Rabbi Yoshua's position. Rabbi Eliezer comes and says, even here, we disagree with Rabbi Yoshua. Not only do we say by Eruvei Tchumin that we don't require bread, but even by Eruvei Chatzerot, we do not require kikar. And that's the purpose of the Mishnah over here. Then, Eitevei Abaye, this is, according to Argamar, has the Girsa of Rashi, which is, Bechol Me'arvin Eruvei Chatzerot, Ubechol Mishtatfim Shitufei Mevot. You have a braita that says that you can make an Eruv Chatzerot and a Shituf Mevot out of anything. Velo Amru Da'arev Bepat Elo B'Chatzer Bilvad. But we only said to make an Eruv out of bread in the Chatzer, in the courtyard. So the braita itself is internally inconsistent. It says, Eruvei Chatzerot you can make out of anything. And then afterwards it says, you can only be married bepat inside of the chazer. So how do we do that? So man shmai le demar pat in mida achrin alo. Who's the author of the position that bread works for an erev chazerot, nothing else? Rabbi Yoshua. And nevertheless, it says in the bright that begins, v'ktani b'chol. So you see that the definition of the word b'chol can't be what we thought. We thought until now the word b'chol means anything. But it's clear that in this bright it can't mean anything because Rabbi Yoshua is the author of that position in the bright. And it says, Bechol Me'arvin. You can use anything for Eruvei Chatzerot. So how could that be? Elo, the definition of the word Bakol must be any type of bread that you want. Bechol Me'arvin means any type of bread. Rabbi Yeshua says it must be bread. But we don't demand that it be wheat bread. It can be any type of bread, any grain, whatever you want. So Bakol, once we've redefined the word Bakol to mean not anything, but rather any type, then in our Mishnah you could say the same thing. In our Mishnah, you could reconcile our Mishnah with Rabbi Yoshua. Who says that our Mishnah is against the position of Rabbi Yoshua? It could be in concert with the position of Rabbi Yoshua because the Kol Marvin in our Mishnah would be any type of bread. And then you'd read the next piece as Umishtatfim Chutz Mimayim Umelach. What you can use anything for and exclude water and salt from, that would be a Shituv Mevot. But in terms of Eruv Chatzerot, even the Tanakam will agree you need bread. It's just bakol, meaning that you can do it with any bread you want. So once that's the case, we can't say that the Mishnah here is coming to negate the position of Rabbi Yoshua. Ela Amar Rabba Baruchana, Afuke mid Rabbi Yoshua, Damar Shlema in Prusalo, Mashmalan Bakol. Rather, the word bakol here must be coming to tell us that you can use any type of bread. Any type of bread includes even pieces of bread, not just whole bread. And that's why our Mishnah is repeated over here, bakol, to teach us not necessarily to negate the position of Rabbi Yoshua that you need to use bread for Eruv Chatzerot, but rather to negate his position with regards to the fact that you must use the whole piece of bread and not a broken piece of bread. Uprusa matimalo. Why can't you use a broken piece of bread? I'm Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul, I'm Rabbi Mishum Eva. Because we worry about discord, we worry about conflict, jealousy, and somebody's going to say, I put in a whole loaf and you put in a half loaf. How is it? We want to keep everything even, or at least somewhat even-handed, so everybody should give in whole pieces of bread, so that there's, or whole loaves, or whole chalot, whatever it is, and so that there's no argument about who gave more, who gave less, even though there's still not a size definition, so you can still have the problem, but nevertheless, at least this way, we don't have, you know, guy putting in one slice and the other guy putting in a loaf, we just want to have whole pieces. Amalei ravacha brei deravel ravashi, irvu kulan prusot mahu. What happens if everybody gives in broken pieces of bread? Everybody gives a slice of bread. Then it's all even and we don't have that problem. Then maybe it'll go back to the old ways. Meaning that we're afraid that if we let them do this with prusot, then some one time somebody will give in a whole loaf or a whole challah, and then the whole thing will start again. We don't want to tempt fate. So we say, just do whole loaves, whole challot, and then we won't have any of that discord. What you have to assume is that there was a standard size of loaves or chalot that they gave or that people cooked baked in those days, and that's why it would have come out much more even than using prusot versus whole loaves of bread. That's the way Rashi learns this Gemara. Again, Rabbi Yoshua agrees by Eruv Tchumin that you don't need chalot. He says over here, you do need chalot. We don't disagree with that. We agree in the end that you do need chalot. The disagreement comes up about regards whether you have to use a whole or a piece. And Rabbi Yeshua says you need to use a whole. Our Mishnah comes to negate that and says you can even use prusot, you can even use pieces of the challah. And the reason that we would distinguish between here and there is because the whole problem here is Mishum Eva. It's because multiple people are putting into this Eruvei Chatzerot, and that's why we worry about prusot, and that's why we worry about challah. But by Eruvei Tchumin, that's not an issue. There's no issue of Eva to worry about because it's not necessarily that there are multiple people joining in Eruv Tchumin. Eruv Tchumin could even be a single individual. That's the way Rashi learns it. Tosafot both starts with a different Hava Mina in the Gemara and then has a different Girsa in Abaye. He says that the Girsa in Abaye is Etevei B'chol Ma'arvin Eruvei Tchumin. Our Gemara has Eruvei Chatzerot. So the Girsa according to him is Eruvei Tchumin. And then Rabbi Avram explains that the whole sugya is like this. Tane Nina Chadizimna B'chol Marvin. We saw earlier in the Masechta B'chol Marvin, Mashma Ben Eruvei Chatzerot Ben Eruvei Tchumin. That means that the first time we saw this, it says Eruvin, B'chol Marvin. How do you know if that's Eruv Chatzerot, Eruv Tchumin? It seems to be referring to both of them. So now we have this Mishnah over here. It comes along and says B'chol Marvin, in order to negate that position of Rabbi Yoshua. Because had it not done this, had it not written two times, I would have established, or I would have set up the first Mishnah as talking about Eruvei Tchumin, and this Mishnah speaking about Eruvei Chatzerot. Contextually, that's what's going on. The Mishnah in the beginning of the Masechta is in the section talking about Eruvei Tchumin. So I would have assumed the B'chol Ma'arvin over there is Eruvei Tchumin. And that's it. Eruvei Chatzerot, we do not argue on Rabbi Yoshua. Only in Eruvei Tchumin do we argue on Rabbi Yoshua. Along comes this Mishnah over here and says B'chol Ma'arvin to teach us that even Eruvei Chatzerot, we argue on Rabbi Yoshua's position because you have Eruvin there and Eruvin here. Now you have to explain both of them. Then we explain the B'chol Ma'arvin over there as Eruvei Tchumin. We explain this one as Eruvei Chatzerot. And Rabbi Elazar comes along to say, we argue. B'chol Ma'arvin means anything, any type of Eruv now. And we argue on his position in both places. We argue on his position in Eruv Tchumin, and we argue on his position both in Eruvei Chatzerot. So that's why you have the Mishnah mentioned twice, according to Rabbo Lafuke mid Rabbi Yoshua, to come to negate the position of Rabbi Yoshua. Then, Eitzvei Abaye, Abaye now disagrees that Rabbi Yehoshua necessarily also disagrees by Erev Tchumin. We just said now, according to the way Tosfot is learning, as opposed to Rashi, who said Rabbi Yehoshua agrees by Erev Tchumin, and he only argues by Erev Chatzerot, and we were coming to say that we disagree by Erev Chatzerot, Tosafot believes that Rabbi Yeshua's position of Pat applies both to Eruvei Tchumin and to Eruvei Chatzerot. That's why it says Bechol Marvin. Bechol Marvin means both Eruvei Tchumin and Eruvei Chatzerot, because we mentioned it twice to show you that it has meaning in both contexts. And there, Rabbi Yeshua says Kikarin, that you must use bread. So based on that, we say Rabbi Yeshua says you need bread for both Eruvei Tchumin and Eruvei Chatzerot. And we say Rabbi Lezer says no to both of those. No to the Eruv Tchumin and no to the Eruvei Chatzerot. All of a sudden we have eight ve abaye. But it says mechol ma'arvin eruvei tchumin, mechol mishtatvin shutvei mivot. Below amru al arei bepat elu bechatzer bilvad. So now there's no inconsistency in the brayta. The brayta has three different issues: has eruvei tchumin, shutvei mivot, and pat. But pat is by eruvei chatzerot. Once you've done that, what you've shown is who's the author of that brayta? Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Yehoshua authored the brayta that says chatzerot require pat. And nevertheless, by Eruvei Tchumin, he says, Bechol Me'arvin, that you can use anything. So you see from this that Rabbi Yeshua doesn't disagree when it comes to Eruvei Tchumin. If that's the case, then you can't tell the whole story that we just told, which is Bechol Me'arvin means both Eruvei Tchumin and Eruvei Chatzerot. That's why it's repeated twice, to show you in both contexts. Bechol Me'arvin means once, you know, Tchumin, here it means Chatzerot. That means that it's a generic term for both of them. That's just not true. Rabbi Yehoshua says by Erev Tchumin that I don't need lechem. We have an ibraita that says that. So then we have the next statement of Rabbi Bar Chana, which says Lafuki Rabbi Yehoshua. You're right. Rabbi Yehoshua only makes his position or takes his position by Erev Chatzerot, by Chala, and the Bakol comes to exclude the Prusa aspect, the whole aspect, that you have to use a Shalem and not the Prusa, that is what's negated by Kol here. So that's the way Tosafot reads the Gemara. Two changes from Rashi. One is the Havamino, he says, is different. Our Havamino is that Rabbi Yeshua's din applies across the board, both to Eruv Tchumin and Eruv Chatzerot. Abaye's question is about Eruv Tchumin. By Eruv Chatzerot, we don't have any question. It's by Eruv Tchumin, and we show by Eruv Tchumin that Bechol Me'arvin, that you can do anything, even according to Rabbi Yeshua. And if that's the case, their machloket is local to here, which is about Chatzerot. And then we have to find a different reason why we said Bakol here to come to exclude Rabbi Yehoshua, and that's about Shalem and Prusa. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Shaul, or the other Gersa here is Amar Rabbi Yonatan ben Shaul, nitlahe mena kidei chalata, uchidei dimua maravin lo ba. He makes a statement, which is that if you have a loaf of bread, of which you've taken chala, the requirement to remove chala, so now it's a Prusa because you broke off the piece of chala. And the other case is a case where it's dimua. Dimua is a mix between chuma and chulin. So in a case here where you have chuma and chulin mixed in together, and then you made it into a challah, and you have to remove a portion of it to give back to the kohen because of the chuma that's embedded in it, that's 1%, which is the chuma gdola. So you break off a piece of 1% to give it back to the kohen to make it mitukan. He says, ma'arvin lo ba, you can use this for the eruv. The basic underlying principle is that the chisaron hu tikuna. The missing piece is what's mitake in the chalat. It makes it whole in the sense of not whole without a broken piece, but whole in the sense of it now has utility. You can use it. It's now usable. Which is before you had a chalat that was inedible, and now you have a chalat that is edible because you took off the chalat, you took off the timua. And nobody would complain about that because you are being mitake in the chalat, number one. And number two is that it's a de minimis piece. It's a small amount that you're taking off. It's 1% by the dimua, and by the chala, it's 1/24th or 1/48th. We'll see in a second. Now, v'atanya, don't we have a bright talk? De dimua ma'arvin lo ba. When it comes to dimua, which is only 1%, then you can use it for the eruv. Kadei chala ta, ma'arvin lo ba. Then you cannot use it for the chala. That's a question on Rabbi Yonatan ben Shaul's statement. Lokasha hab chalat nachtom, hab chalat balabait. Depends on whose chala we're talking about. Are we talking about commercial chala, or are we talking about the homemade chala? The difference being the tanan. We have a mishnah. Shir chala. How much do you have to remove for chala? Echad me'asrim ve'arba. 1/24th. Hosei yitzah le'atzmo v'yitzah le'mishtebno. Echad me'asrim ve'arba. If you're making the chala for yourself, homemade chala, or you're making it for the simcha chala, right? You're making it for your son's wedding, You have to take off 1/24. Those are the quantities that you have to take off. Nachtom, who's doing commercial quantities, or a woman who's baking at home, but with intent to sell it commercially, then echad me'arba'im ushmona. Then it's 1/48. So challah, min haTorah is truma. It really is any amount. Chazal established what the amount of kedei challah is based on the psukim and the measurements, but they actually differentiated in the amount of challah taken off. They realized that someone who's baking at commercial quantities to ask them to take off 1/24 was a big loss for them to take. So instead, they took that down to 1/48. They cut in half the amount of challah that you have to take off. You have to take off on residential level, you have to take off 1/24 in order to give to the kohen. The difference being that if you take off 1/24, it's a bigger piece. And that's 4% of the challah, as opposed to 1/48, which is a little more than 2% of the challah. So in that case, that's the difference. Rabbi Yonatan ben Shaul made his statement, kedei challata, at the commercial level. If you take off 1/48, that's okay, because that's a small piece, which is much closer to kedei dimua, which is 1%, and this is a little over 2%. But if you're taking off challah, the residential level, which is for the household challah, which is 1/24, where you're up a little over 4%, then we say that's too big a piece to take off, and that doesn't look whole anymore. So that would be the difference between these two. Amar Rav Chista, tafra b'kisseim, what happens if the challah broke in half? So he wants to put the challah back together, so he sticks a toothpick in it on each side, and he pushes them together, and has the toothpick hold them back together. So he says, tafra b'kisseim, arvin lo ba, you can use that for the eruv, no problem. Va'atanya, don't we have a bright that says, ein arvin lo ba, that you're not allowed to use that? Lokasha. Question of whether the seam line is visible or not. If you do such a good job that it's not visible, then it's fine to use it. If you do it in a way that it's still visible, the crack or the break in the challah, then you cannot use it. So it's not only the fact that you put it back together, but you have to put it back together so well that someone would be able to tell that it was a broken piece beforehand. Amar Rabbi Zeira Mashmol, Ma'arvin bepat orez ubepat dochan. You can use rice bread and millet bread as your eruv. Even though these are not standard of the five grains, nevertheless, you can use them. This will come up a lot in the next Masech that we do, is Masech Pesachim, as to where, what is the standing of orez and dochan, which are these sub-grains. They're not in there with the chamesha taminim. Do they create challah? Do they rise? Do they make chametz? But it was clear that they were utilized to make bread in their time. And the question is, what is the status of that bread? So we'll have that in Pesachim, the Gabei Pesach, the Gabei Chametz. Over here, they say, despite everything we know in Pesachim, over here, they do count towards the Eruv. You may use them for the Eruv. Amar Marukva, the Dedim, if actually mine de Mar Shmuel, I was explained what Shmuel said, Vipat Orez Ma'arvin, Upat Dochan Ein Ma'arvin. By rice bread, you can use it. By millet bread, you cannot use it. Amar Abchir, Avin Amar Rav, Marvin bepat adashim. So now you have statements from Shmuel. First statement from Shmuel is that you can utilize, according to Rabbi Zeira, both pat orez and pat dochan. Then we have a second statement, which is what Mar Ukva says in the name of Shmuel, which is pat orez yes, pat dochan no. Now we have a statement, Rav Chiya ba'avin, in the name of Rav. So this is from Rav, that Marvin bepat adashim. You can even use lentil bread. So again, lentils were ground into flour, and they made lentil bread in their day out of lentils. It was considered to be one of the staple products. You see it mentioned a lot in the Gemara and the Mishnah, in terms of a food item. So Gemara says, Ini vahi davai bishnei demar Shmuel. There was this individual in the time of Shmuel, v'shadja l'kalbe. He threw out this lentil bread to his dog, velo achla, and the dog refused to eat it. And if the dog refused to eat it, then how can you say that this is good enough for human consumption? That's right. It's not roi l'achilat kelev, and certainly not roi l'achilat adam. And if that's the case, how could you say you can make an eruv out of pat adashim? So, hi, the sharminim abya. You got mixed up over there. That's not a case where it was lentil bread. That was a multigrain bread. And that's why the dog wouldn't touch it, because it was multigrain, dichtiv. Because it says in Yechezkel, Vata, kach lecha chitin, use orin, ufol, fall like pool in our day, vadashim, vidochan, vikusmim. So he took all of these types of grains and put them together. Rav Papa Amar, wait a minute. That multigrain that Yechezkel put together over there is not exactly your standard multigrain, because then Hashem tells him, hayitz luya, b'tzorat adam havai. That was baked or roasted with human excrement. Dichtiv. V'hi biglalei tse'at ha'adam to ugena le'enehem. That you're going to make this in the excrement of man in front of them. That you're going to make it or produce it in front of them. So now, when you have the psukim in Yechezkel, or describing over there, Hashem is telling Yechezkel, he's going to put on this act. He's going to act like an avel. And he's going to have this horrible food and this disgusting items with him to show B'nai Yisrael about what's going to happen. It's about the siege that's going to be laid to Yerushalayim, the difficult times that are going to come, and about the fact that there's going to be the destruction of the Mikdash. The first part of Sefer Yechezkel is basically establishing the credentials of Yechezkel. Yechezkel predicts the Churban HaBayit, and in doing so, he's trying to gain the confidence of the people that he really is a Navi. From the middle of Yechezkel, or Sefer Yechezkel, once Vayavo HaPalit, the escapee from Yerushalayim shows up in Bavel and gives them the information and the news that the Mikdash has been destroyed. From that point forward, Yechezkel launches into Nechama and Nevuot about the Atid Lavo and the third Mikdash. That is because as soon as the Palit comes and gives the news, he's basically established Yechezkel's credentials that he was telling the truth all along. The people in Bavel, nobody believes that the Mikdash is going to be destroyed and that it's really going to happen. As soon as the news of it being destroyed comes, that establishes that Yechezkel, what he has been saying until now, was true. And once that, going forward, then he launches into Nechama. So here is part of the act that he's going to put on. He's going to lay down on one side, lay down on the other side. He's going to act like an avel. All these things that are laid out in Sefer Yechezkel. So over here you have this bread that he's going to make, this multigrain bread. And we know that it's a multigrain bread because it lays out all the grains. But then we say, wait a minute, it's not exactly just the multigrain bread. It's baked in a way that is pretty disgusting. And therefore, maybe that's the problem over here. Who says that multigrain in itself is problematic? So the Gemara says, "My vu gatzi orim." Over there, it describes it as being a cake of barley. So it says, "Ugat seorim tochlena," that you're going to eat ugat seorim. Well, you didn't make any ugat seorim; you just made a multigrain item. So Amar Rav Chista lishi urim is that you're going to eat it in pieces, rationed. It's going to be rationed because there's not going to be enough, and you're going to have to take small rations. So they're taking the word seorim and making a play on shiurim. Or the other possibility is Rav Papa Amar arichata is probably the right gears over here. Arichita, arichat se'orim, v'lo ki arichat chitim. Aricha is used in the Gemara to be the layout, or the way that you make it, like when you braid challah, the way you set it out in the trough. That is called arichata. So over here it means arichata ki se'orim. You're going to make it like se'orim, which people don't take such care in the way that they present it, versus arichat chitim, where they do take care to make it. So that's what it means, ugat se'orim. It says an aricha like se'orim. Rashi over here says, uchtiv. It says later on in Yechezkel, in Perek Chav Dalet, Lechem Anashim Lo Tochal. It says that you will not eat the bread of man. And that has to do later on where Yechezkel acts like an avel and says you will not eat the bread of man. Over there, it's really talking about a beilut, that you have a Sudat Havra'ah, which is that other people will give you your meal and you will not have your meal from your own. Rashi takes that to mean that this is the same bread that he's talking about over here in the Psukim. And you see from that, you have a multigrain bread. And God later on tells Yechezkel, you're not going to eat bread of man. So that means that this bread is not the bread of man. And that's how he brings the proof from here that this isn't considered to be bread. Then we negate that by saying, well, there are other factors here. So Tosafot, or Rabbeinu Tam, takes issue with that. He says, you're talking about something that's 20 prakim away. You're talking about something in Perek Dalet, and then something in Perek Chav Dalet. That can't be the reference there of Lechem Anashim Lo Tochal. It's not referencing the bread that's over here. It's referencing the fact that he won't have his meal of his own. It's a Sudat Avraah. But rather, the Rabbeinu Tam says, how do we know here that it's not Lechem Anashim? Because it says, Shach Lecho, you're going to take this and you're going to eat it because you're going to be Matzor, and it's going to be a Shat Adchak. And you're going to eat this out of necessity because the Matzor, you see how disgusting it is. And nevertheless, you're going to eat it because you're going to be so desperate for food because of the siege on Yerushalayim. There, people are starving. When you're starving, you eat anything. And that's the proof here of that this is not normal bread, or this is not the normal fare of food. So in the end, the Gemara seems to indicate that you could use pat orez, pat dochan, it's not clear because we have a stira of whether Shmuel approved or didn't approve, and pat adashim, it sounds like we can use it, because adashim are not the problem, it was the multigrain that was the problem, that the multigrain was not considered to be human food. We tried to bring a proof from Yechezkel, it's not clear that we have a full proof from there, because there are other factors that are involved in the pasuk from Yechezkel. All right, now we move on to Yechiel's question, Mishnah. Noten adam ma'al chenvani. A person gives money to a storekeeper, ulanachtom, or to a baker, kedei shizkeh lo be'eruv, so they can join into the Eruv. He basically pays them and says, listen, can you put me into the Eruv? They're going to buy the challah from you. They're going to buy whatever the bread is from one of you two. And I'm going to give you money so that you put me in with them. The Rabbi Eliezer says, no problem. That works. The money does not work. Money does not work in this case. Now Rashi explains, why does the money not work here? She'ein ma'ot konot ad shimshoch. That the problem here is your failure in the kinyan. Failure in the kinyan because ma'ot don't work. Ma'ot are not a form of kinyan except by karka. They're only a way to facilitate exchange, but the exchange has to be done with a kinyan mishicha. You have to actually lift it up. And because of that, over here, you're lacking a kinyan in the Eruv, and it doesn't work. That's the way Rashi explains it over here. Tosafot says that he went out of his way to do this, and it wasn't necessary, because Rashi later on in the Mishnah explains the same thing, which is the problem is what he did with this Tenvani, or with this Nachtom. He basically appointed them through a commercial transaction. He did not appoint them as shlichim, to be his agents, to have them join into the Eruv. Had he appointed them as agents, it would have been fine, because they could have acted on his behalf to join him into the Eruv. But he didn't do it that way. He gave them money. And by giving them money, he's making it clear that he wants it to be done through a transaction and not through shlichut. And that's why it fails over here. It fails because, transactionally, you can't get into the Eruv. You can only get into the Eruv through a kinyan or through agency. And that's why it fails over here. The failure is simply his mindset. And his mindset says, I want to do it through money. And in the end, what does the Nachtom or the Chenvadi do? They do it through, either they're mezakeh him in it, or they do it as a shliach for him, and that's shalom midato. And we said before, the Ne'er of Chatzirot, that's be midato. And you're not doing it the way he wants. Now midato, that's a new interpretation of the word dato. We thought until now, dato means that his acquiescence, that he knows about it. Now the dato also means that the methodology that you use also has to be midato. That he has to understand that when he's getting into the Erev Chatzirot, he gives you a way to do it, or a method to do it, that you follow that prescription. If you don't, that's also in Shalom Midato. And that's the failure over here. So that's what Tosafot says, as opposed to Rashi's failure in the Kinyan. And he says, Rashi himself later on in the Mishnah says the same thing. Umodim b'shar kol adam, we agree with everyone else, shezachu lo ma'otav, that if you give money to anyone else besides the Chenvani or the Nachtom, then it works. Because in that case, it's clear that you're not buying from them because they don't have the materials, they don't have the goods. So when you gave them the money, it's clear that you're appointing them as a shliach to act on your behalf. And if that's the case, they can act on your behalf and do it. So that's why it works. By lay people, if you give them money, it works. By commercial or storekeepers or bakers, there, when you're giving them money, you think you're transacting, not appointing them as shlichim. She'en ma'arvin la'adam ela midato. This is what we just said before. You can only make an eruv midato. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, v'med varim amurim be'ivrei tchumin. We saw this Rabbi Yehuda just a daf ago. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, v'med varim amurim, when do we say be'ivrei tchumin? When do you require dat? That's by eruv tchumin. Because by eruv tchumin, there is a benefit and a detriment when you put out the tchumin. Means you can go more in one direction, but less in the other direction. You need his acquiescence because you can't do something that's the detriment of another individual without their acquiescence. Where it's only upside for him, marvin ledato, bishalo ledato. You don't need his acquiescence over there because it's all to his benefit. You can do something to the benefit of an individual even when he's not present. But you can't do something to his detriment when he's not present. So Eruvei Tchumin, which have both an aspect of benefit and detriment, that you can't do without his acquiescence. You can't do on his behalf. But in the case of Eruv Chatzirot, which only has upside, which is now he's allowed to carry, as opposed to before he couldn't carry, there is no downside over here. Then we say that he could do it even without his acquiescence, even without his permission. That is Rabbi Yehuda's position. Now, we saw yesterday's daf that the Chachamim or Chabei Rav Cholkin Alav, they disagree with him, and we saw there that they disagree with him both when it's a chatzer with one mavoi and a chatzer with two mivaot. They argue with him on both instances, and say Rabbi Yehuda's position is in any chatzer, we say Zakin Shadam Shalom V'Fanav. You can do this on his behalf. Now the Gemara says, "My taimo di Rabbi Eliezer." Why does Rabbi Eliezer say when you give the money to the Chenvani and the Nachtom, it does work? As opposed to the Chachamim, we say it doesn't work. We explain why it doesn't work according to the Chachamim. The question is, why does it work according to Rabbi Eliezer? You don't have a kinyan here, and you don't have shlichut over here. So how is it functioning? The Gemara says, halo mashach. He never made a kinyan, he never made a mishicha, and he paid money to the Chenvani and the Nachtom. What exactly allowed this transaction to go through and make it effective? They made it like the four times the year. Four times a year is a Mishnah in Chulin, and Mishnah in Chulin, there are four times a year where when you sell an animal to individuals, you have to tell them, I already sold the mother that day, or I've already sold the child that day, because the assumption is whoever's buying an animal that day is going to shecht it on that day. These are what we call heavy meat days. These are days where people are preparing for the su'udot, and because of that, you have to assume anything that's sold on the day will be shechted on that day. And you have to inform a person, because of oto ve'et b'no, you're not going to shecht them on one day, you have to inform the person about the other item. Now, in addition to that, there are other rules that the Chachamim establish on that day, and which is this next Mishnah, which is the Tanan. V'dalit prakim elu, mashchitim et tabach b'al korcho. Afilu shor shove elef dinar, ve'en lokoach elef dinar echad, bufim oto lishkot. What we do is, in these situations, because everybody needs meat, therefore we force the butchers on that day to shecht an animal. If you have an individual who comes in and bought from him a dinar's worth of meat, and now he doesn't have buyers for the remainder of the animal, nevertheless, because this individual paid him for meat and is expecting to get meat, and it's an important meat day, therefore we force the tabach, we force the butchers to shecht an animal. Means that if it's a 1,000 dinar animal, and he only has now pre-sold a dinar's worth, he's got to shech the animal and give it to him. He got promised his meat, he's got to get him his meat on that day. Doesn't matter if he has to take the loss on the remainder of the animal. Hopefully he'll sell it. But the institution of the Chachamim was that he's forced to shech on those days. What are those 4 days? Erev Yom Tov Shirishon Shel Pesach, Terev Pesach. There's Erev Yom Tov Shel Atzeret, which is Shavuot. Erev Yom Tov Shavuot. Erev Yom Tov Acharon Shel Chag, Erev Shmini Atzeret, Ve'erev Rosh Hashanah, and Erev Rosh Hashanah, and then Erev Yom HaKippurim Bagalil. In the Galil and Erev Yom Kippur when they made a big meal. So those are the 4 or 5 big meat days of the year. The one that's obviously missing from there is Erev Sukkot. Which is how come it's missing? Omer Rabbeinu Mishum Dekalei Alma Tridei B'Sukkah B'Lulav. Everybody's so involved in the mitzvah of Sukkah and Lulav and getting everything ready. They don't do so much meat preparation or so much, or they have the leftovers from Erev Yom Kippur. Whatever it is that they did, but an Erev Sukkot was not one of those 4 periods of time during the year, which were considered to be heavy shechita days. Therefore, because we forced the butcher to shech the animal on behalf of this individual, imate mate the lokeach. If the animal dies, then the purchaser has lost his money. We've given the purchaser a real acquisition in this animal. How do we know that? Because he could force the butcher to shecht the animal and give him his meat. The fact that we've granted him such strong ownership in the animal means that not only have we granted him ownership for the benefit, but also to the detriment. And that is that once he purchases, pre-buys the meat, he gets his meat no matter what, but that means if the animal dies, he also loses out because he really owns it. So, right, before the shechita, if it dies, then meit lokeach, he loses his money. Halo mashach. Wait a minute, he didn't do any kinyan mishicha, all he did was give money. So, Amar Avuna b'shemashach. No, he did do a kinyan mishicha. Ihochi ema seifo, he could do the latter half of the Mishnah. B'shayimot ha-shana enu kein. The remainder of the year, it's not this way. If you pre-buy meat the remainder of the year, then if the butcher doesn't have enough people to buy into the meat, he returns you your money. He just gives you a refund and says, I don't have enough people to buy it, I don't give you meat. Fikach emeit meitan lemocher. If the animal dies, the purchaser gets his money back, because he doesn't really own any rights in this animal. So amai, why does he get his money back? Hamashach, he made a kinyan mishicha, means that it's a full-fledged transaction. He owns that piece of the animal already. So amar mishmo bar yitzlach lola mishlo mashach. There was no kinyan mishicha. Hachamai eskinam bishazika lo ayudei acher. That he granted it to him ayudei acher. Meaning he brings a third party in, and it tells the third party, make a kinyan on this animal on behalf of so-and-so who purchased or bought a dinar's worth for me. In these 4 times a year where it's considered to be something that's to his benefit, we say, we weigh here, there are 2 things here. He's going to lose money, he paid money, so by having him be a real owner of the animal, he actually could lose out here. On the other hand, by having ownership of the animal, he could force the hand of the butcher to shecht it and give him the meat. So in these 4 periods of the year, it trumps. What trumps is the meat. Everybody needs meat, they want the meat. So over there, we look at that benefit to outweigh the loss or possible loss of money. So therefore, we say it's a zechut lo and zachin shelo b'fanav. B'shayimot ha-shanad d'chovu lo, the remainder of the year where we look at the loss, or we weigh the loss much heavier than the benefit of getting the meat, over there we say, you can't do it because ein chavin lo elo b'fanav. You cannot do something to his detriment except with his acquiescence or in front of him. So this zechut ayidei a third party only works in these 4 periods where the need for meat is so high, or the benefit of having the meat is so great, that the loss of the money is inconsequential. And there we say, Zachin shel adam shelo b'fanav. On the other hand, all the rest of the year, where the loss of money is as consequential as getting the meat, over there we say we can't do a schut without him being there. They are third party. Now, v'ilah, amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'dalet brachim elu, heimidu chachamim divrehem al divrei Torah. Here's the answer, which has impact for us, which is, in these four times a year, the Chachamim went back to the Kor Din D'Oraita. Kor Din D'Oraita, this is Machloket Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara in Baba Metzia. Over here, this is the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, D'Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Dvar Torah, Ma'ot Konot. Rabbi Yochanan says, Min HaTorah, money is effective at making an exchange, having a transaction go through. U'mipnei Ma'amru Mishicha Kona. Why did then the Chachamim institute that money does not work and you need a Kinyan Mishicha? Gzeira. It was an institution to protect the buyers. Shemer Yomar Lo Nisfu Chiteich Ba'aliyah. It was to protect buyers. What's going to happen? You purchase some item, produce from an individual. You go to him, you say, listen, I want to buy it. He says, please pay me. He pays him. Now, Mina Torah, he owns the Chitim. But right now, the Chitim are still sitting in the seller's house, the seller's storehouse. Then there's a fire all of a sudden. Fire in his house, and he has to go out and save things. So, you know, he says, you know what, I'll save this, save that. You know, oh, that stuff up there, I don't own that anymore. That belongs to the buyer. So just let it burn, because it's not his anymore. So in order to protect the buyer, the Chachamim said that we have to have a Kinyan Mishicha as well. Until basically the Lokeach takes physical possession of it, the Ma'ot are not effective at establishing the transaction. And that's for the protection of the buyer. But that means, Min HaTorah, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Ma'ot Konot. A transaction is complete just with money. On the other hand, when it comes to a transaction of Mishicha, that is an addition Midah Chachamim. The Machloket there in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, there Reish Lakish says, arguing on Rabbi Yochanan, and says that the main Kinyan is a Kinyan Mishicha Min HaTorah. And that what we do as a Kinyan Mishicha is Min HaTorah. Ma'ot or konot in certain places, that's an institution of Chachamim for what's called Tachanat HaShuk. That's to allow transactions to go through, allow for commerce to take place. Marketplace, keep a liquid marketplace. So Reish Lakish disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan on that. What is the source that Ma'ot or konot? Rashi over here claims that the source for that is from Kodshim. By Kodshim, by Podeh, it says, V'natana kesef ikam lo. That if you give the money, then the transaction goes through. Tosafot over here says that he doesn't think that's the proper source for it, because that's Hekdesh. And you can always differentiate between Hekdesh and lay people. But Hekdesh has money bikoneh, and that has to do with the fact that Kinyan Mishicha doesn't work by Hekdesh, because a Kinyan Mishicha can only work when you can take it into your own property. Problem with Hekdesh is that Hashem is everywhere. So you can never really take it into your own possession. That's why Ma'ot HaKonot over there. Rather, the Beinu Tam suggests that the source for Ma'ot Konot throughout the Torah is that because Stam Kinyan in the Torah is through Ma'ot. And we see that in different psukim throughout the Torah, throughout the Navi, that whenever it talks about a kinyan or an exchange, it always mentions money. So that's the default type of kinyan, and that's why Rabbi Yochanan says as such. One thing he does ask here is, why didn't the Chachamim then establish both? You have to pay the money, and you have to do a kinyan mishicha. What the Chachamim ended up doing in their gzeirah is interesting. They said that you have to have just to do a kinyan mishicha. Why don't the Chachamim say that both? You have to pay the money, and you have to do a Kinyan Mishicha. Why don't they involve the money at all? You want to have a Kinyan Mishicha, and everything will be done. So he says that the Rivan Teretz, Deim he Mishicha levada, lo tikna. In Kemar, Yomar alokeach lemocher, nisufu chitecha ba'aliyah. Because then you'll have the opposite problem. We only require a Kinyan Mishicha, and we don't require the Kinyan Manot along with it, because the Kinyan Mishicha alone ensures that once the Lokeach takes possession of it, he becomes responsible for it. Because if it was not so, what would end up happening is that he would do a Kinyan Mishicha, he would have possession of the item, but since the transaction is not completed because the money had not exchanged hands, then he will basically do what we were afraid the Mocher would do in the case of money. And that is, he will say, well, your Chitim were my Aliyah, they burnt up, too bad, I didn't own them yet. So in order to ensure that ownership transfer at the moment of Mishicha, the Chachamim eliminated money completely from the transaction. And therefore they made it that Mishicha is the only interaction or transaction, and not that money was involved. The Ri, on the other hand, answers that it was Mitakanat HaShuk. It was a way to ease commerce, so that they didn't require both Mishicha and Ma'ot, but you could simply do through Mishicha the completion of the transaction. And so that was to create commercial ease in Kinyanim. They made it only one. But the Rivan says that there's an underlying problem, that if we don't do it just Mishicha and we add in the Ma'ot as well, you're going to have the opposite effect, which is now you've protected the Lokeach, but you haven't protected the Mocher. In order to protect both parties, we have it that it's only a Kinyan Mishicha and not a Kinyan Ma'ot, so that both parties are protected. The Kinyan Mishicha is there to protect the buyer and to protect the seller. And that way you have both parties protected. In addition, he says, why don't we say then that if the buyer gives money to the seller and then he has yet to do a Kinyan Mishicha and then all of a sudden there's a fire in the seller's house, he says, you know what, your money just burnt in the house. Sorry, I couldn't save your money burnt, and now we have no more money, because the transaction wasn't complete. So Tosafot differentiates between money and produce, and he says that by money, the only way to store money, the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia, is to bury it in the ground. And therefore, if the money burnt, it's really a pshia of the seller, and he's responsible for the money. He basically becomes, in some sense, and he becomes the Shomer Sachar and the Ma'ot. Tosafot in the end says, maybe he's not a Shomer Sachar, but he's a Posheya. He's even a Shomer Chinam, but he's a Posheya because he didn't take care of the money. So the whole institution here is to protect both parties, to ensure that everybody gets what they want without any person just saying, you know, you lost or you lost. We want to keep people honest and we want to keep them have vested interest in ensuring that the transaction is complete without either party losing out over here. Now, back to our Gemara. So what does this do for us? This does for us, which is that Rabbi Yochanan says in those four times a year, the Chamim dropped their need for Mishicha in order to facilitate the ability to buy meat and have it be Ma'ot Konot like the Torah. And that's what's happening over here as well. Rabbi Eliezer says the Chachamim basically dropped their need for a Kinyan Mishicha over here and said Ma'ot Konot in order to facilitate Tikkun Shabbat or Tikkun Chatzerot. Remember, the whole problem of carrying the Chatzer is only an institution of the Rabbanan. And so the Rabbanan, in order to facilitate the solution to that problem, say we're going to drop our Takanat Mishicha and say Ma'ot or Konot. And that's what Rabbi Eliezer will say. Rabbi Eliezer will say that they made Tikkun Shabbat, or buying of the Eruv, the same way they did it with these Dal Prakim in buying of the meat. Alright, now we move on. Umodim Mishar Kol Adam. They agree by any other person. Man Shar Kol Adam. Who is anybody besides the Nachtom and the Chenvani? Amarav Balabait. This is your regular homeowner. Chen Amar Shmuel Balabait. Damar Shmuel Noshna Ela Nachtom. That's only true. Our Mishnah, where you give money, it doesn't work. That's only true by a baker. Aval balabayit koneh. But if it's balabayit, it works because when you give the money to the balabayit, it's clear that you're appointing him as a shliach and not transacting with him because he doesn't have the goods that you want. V'amar shmo lo shna ela ma'a aval kli koneh. That's only if he gives money. Because in money, he's trying to transact. On the other hand, if he gives a utensil or some other object, it works because then you have what's called kinyan sudar, kinyan chalipin. When you give over the kli, when the chenvani or the nachtom takes possession of it and makes a kinyan on it, automatically you're granted rights in the produce or whatever he's going to give you because of what's called kinyan chalipin, the kinyan of exchange. By him taking a kinyan on this, automatically you're given rights in the other object. Varmar Shmuel lo shna, ela da'amar lo zcheli. That's only when he says to him, do it for me on my behalf. Of Amar Arevli Shliach Shavyevikani. So the only case is when he goes, do it on my benefit or do it for me, because there it's clear that he's asking him to transact on his behalf. But if he says to the Chenvani or the Nachtom, Arevli, put me into the Eruv, it's clear that then he's not trying to transact with them. He's appointing them as a Shliach to act on his behalf. So even with a Chenvani and a Nachtom, you can make them into Shlichim if you use the right language, if you use Arevli. The problem is that in our Mishnah, he's using zecheli, which means that he's trying to transact. And when he's trying to transact, and then what happens? The nachtom or the chenvani, instead of doing that, goes ahead and is mezakeh him, or does something on his behalf, it's shlomi dato. Because he was clear that he wanted it to be a transaction, and you're affecting his portion of the eruv in a different manner. And because of that, that's considered shlomi dato.
If arev, then it could be with maos too?
Because you're appointing a shliach and you give me money to spend the money on your behalf, not trying to transact with the money. And so it'll even work by money when you say arevli. Okay, next. I'm Rabbi Yehuda b'med v'arim amurim. I'm Rabbi Yehuda b'shmo halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that you only need da'at by eruv tchumin. You do not need da'at by an eruv chatzerot. Blow out. Elokom makom shishana Rabbi Yehuda b'eruvin halacha kimoto. Anywhere that Rabbi Yehuda makes a statement in eruvin, halacha is like him. So not only is the halacha like him in this Mishnah, the halacha is like him anywhere he appears in Eruvin. Amar le Rav Chanan Bagda, the Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. So Rav Chanan Bagda, who is Rav Chanan probably from Baghdad, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Afilu b'mavoy shenitlu korotavo lechiyav. You're going to say even in a mavoy where the korah or the lechi was taken away in the middle of Shabbat, and Rabbi Yehuda over there says that it's still mutar for the remainder of Shabbat. Since you entered Shabbat when it was mutar, it remains mutar. Is that what you mean? You mean even over there? When Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel made their statement that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, they meant even in that case. Samarle, they responded to him, Be'eruvin amarti locha v'lo mechitzot. I told you that the halacha is like him when it comes to Eruvin, not by mechitzot. Eruvin means like Eruv, or the establishment of an Eruv, or things that deal with Eruv itself. Not things that deal with mechitzot, which is lechi and korah, which are functioning like a mechitza. Samarlei Rav Acha b'rei d'rovo l'Rav Hashi halacha michla d'plige. You're suggesting here the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, which makes it sound like there are people arguing on him. V'amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi kol makom shemar Rabbi Yehuda ematai ubameh b'mishnatenu inu elo l'fresh divrei chachamim. Whenever Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says ematai ubameh, he's coming to qualify the statement beforehand, not to argue on the statement beforehand. It's something, he says it, and everybody agrees to it. Or he agrees to the main position, and they agree to him. He's just telling you the qualification of that position. So in our Mishnah, what does Rabbi Yehuda say? Bamed of Aruim Arumurim. Sounds like everybody agrees with him, because he's just coming to qualify or explain the position of the Chachamim, not to argue on their position. If that's the case, how come you have to say halacha to Rabbi Yehuda? You could just say halacha, everybody agrees. There is nobody who disagrees. You don't need to say halacha when nobody disagrees. Velo plige, and they don't argue, v'anan t'nan. We just had our previous Mishnah, yesterday's daf. Nitos v'aleim, if new people entered into the Eruv, mosifu mizakeh, either the person who's holding the Eruv can add on of his own to the Eruv and be mizakeh them in it, or v'tzarich le'odia, or if they give into the Eruv, he has to tell them that he's using their items to be part of the Eruv. So over there he says you have to let them know that you're joining them into the Eruv. It has to be mi da'atam. Hatam b'chatzer sheben shnei mavuot. That's a case where it's a chatzer between two mavuot. When it's a chatzer between two mavuot, then there's a choice. You can go one direction, the other direction. Over there, it could be to his benefit or his detriment, depending which mavuot he wants to carry with. So in that case, it has to be midato. The suggestion being here that Rabbi Yehuda would only disagree in a case where it's zechut lo, which is that it's in a chatzer and one mavui, where it's obvious that it's only to his benefit and there's no other choice. But in a case where it could be to his detriment, then there he would agree with the chachamim that you need to hodia. So Gemara says, v'amar Rav Shizvi amar Rav Chista. We had Rav Shizvi amar Chista yesterday say, v'zot omeret chalukim alav chayrevav al Rav Yehuda. That he said, this tells us that they argue on him. Gemara said, it's obvious that they argue on him because that's what there is. There's a disagreement over here. And we said that Rav Shizvi, or the Chiddush in Rav Shizvi Amar Rav Chista is that they argue even in a case where it's a chatzer with two mivot. The Rabbi Yehuda there says, you don't need dato, and the Chachamim do need dato. So we see that they argue even over there. There's an argument straight across the board between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, and over here you're telling me that Bamed Dvarim Amurim means that he's just qualifying, explaining the Mishnah? Ela Gavra, Gavra Karomit. You're asking about two statements from Amoraim. You're asking about Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who says that whenever Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah says Bamet, it means that he's explaining the position of the Chachamim and not disagreeing with them. And you're asking me from Shmuel, who says that Allah and Rabbi Yehuda implying that they argue, that the Chachamim argue on him. That's Gavra Gavra. You're asking about two Amoraim who are bringing different Memrot down. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says one thing, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says something else. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel will say that the Bamet in the Mishnah is not telling you that he's explaining it. He's arguing. Bamet means he argues. And we have a difference in opinion of that. Mar Savar Pligi, Mar Savar Lo Pligi. Shmuel believes there is an argument here, and that's why he says halacha. Rabbi Shua Balevi believes there is no argument over here. In addition to that, obviously, Rav Shizvi and Amar Rav Chista will agree with Shmuel's position that they do argue, because he explained the whole Mishnah as being that Chavirav Chokin Alav, that his friends argue on him, and they said they argue on him in all cases, whether it's a chatzer with two mivot or chatzer with one mavoy, they argue on him. So the Gemara's conclusion is that the Machloket Amoraim here is exactly that. You can't reconcile between the two positions of the Amoraim here, and they have different views about how Rabbi Yehuda sits with his Baal Plugtot, which is, one believes they're arguing, and one says he's explaining them, and they all agree to this position of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, we'll stop over here.